Stellar.
Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The mind. Show tapes live 5:30 p.m., 8:30 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. The channel's called Ann and Zach. Join us. It's a good time, man. All right. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's out sick this week, but that's not why we have Justin on. We had been meaning to have Justin on. I guess now I'm using the royal we for a while. Justin Savakis was the co-host of this podcast for like 4 years, and 5 years, and we have not had him on in a long time. Justin, thanks for coming back on the show, man.
It's good to be back, and you changed a lot while I was gone, I see.
Yeah, hey, you may notice that now we're, like, doing this, you know, with cameras on YouTube and stuff. Like, it's different. A little different from the last time we did.
Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah. How you been?
Been good. Been exceedingly busy, basically, since the holidays. Yeah. I'm just starting to see the light of day now, and it's been a crazy few months. A lot of changes around here.
Well, yeah, okay. So, I mean, you are still primarily a Blu-ray disc authoring house, right? Like, that is...
Right, and I do other stuff, too. Like, I prep old content for Hulu, for example. There's some other stuff I do. But, yeah, most of what I do is discs.
Right. So, like, what's out right now that people might have seen that, like, you worked on?
Well, the most immediate thing, and actually the thing that was... so much work over the holidays and into January and part of this month was you might have just noticed that Gundam, like a bunch of Gundam, just went up on Hulu.
Yeah, I did.
That was all done here.
Right. Yeah. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like,
yeah. Hulu is they're an interesting company to work with because they are really, really strict when it comes to formatting, and when you upload video to them, it has to be in this very specific format. If there's any like little tiny thin borders around the edges, they have to be trimmed off. It has to be completely progressive, and you have to cut in commercial breaks. They have to be like this 2 second little just bits of black that their software can automatically detect the commercial breaks. You give them time code also,
sure,
but that's how it knows where the commercials are. So you end up having to, you know, encode new video. You have to cut in all the commercial breaks. And see, here's the thing. Normally, anime, you put a commercial break in after the opening. You put a commercial break in at the eye catch.
Yeah.
And you put one, like, before the credits, or if the show fades into the credits right before the end or the next episode preview. They won't let you do that because they're just like, people just skip to the next episode and skip the ad.
Right.
And there goes the money. So you have to find somewhere between the end credits and the eye catch in order to naturally place another commercial break.
Sure.
And that's way harder than it looks, especially with a show like Gundam, because usually the entire second half of the show is this giant ride of space cacophony.
Yeah, right.
So it's really kind of like, does it go here or does it go there?
You're just sort of awkwardly finding a commercial break in there somewhere.
Right, and then you have to do the whole thing where you're they like to use their internal subtitle formats. You have these old subtitles that are in this like decades old subtitle format that isn't used anymore, and you have to convert them and add the gaps so that it syncs up now that you added all those little black bits for the commercial.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a production. And now there's a new law in the U.S. that anything that you stream commercially like that, that's in English, has to be closed captioned.
Really?
So I didn't do all of those Gundam shows. Of the five of the shows that went up, I did four. I did all of them but Gundam 00.
Okay.
But Wing, Seed, Origin, and 08 MS Team, that was all us. And the ones that were dubbed, we couldn't do the dub of Gundam Seed because it didn't match the new HD video anymore.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, they did this really gorgeous new HD remaster of Seed where they redid a lot of the animation.
Yeah, they aired it on TV. It was like we had to decide whether or not we were going to do anything with that, but it's not out on video here. I know that.
No, it's not, and the dub doesn't match it at all.
Are they going to have to redub it?
I don't know what they're going to do.
I mean, yeah, right? If they're going to, I mean, yeah.
Well, regardless, that one is not dubbed, but everything else we had to have closed captioned, and that's basically like subtitling something that's already in English. So I had to hire a bunch of people, and I actually, the workload almost broke me, and I ended up having to hire Media OCD's first full-time employee.
Right, so you have an assistant now.
I now have an assistant. His name's Anton. He's a good guy. He's just out of film school, and he is a giant anime nerd, and we spend a half hour every day just watching something.
There you go.
Yep.
Sounds perfect.
That's great, man.
Sounds like things are going pretty good.
There's a lot of stuff that needs to be closed captioned now, so we're staying really busy.
That's good, man. That's a good. It's a good kind of busy, so... Yeah.
Yeah, and I have another mouth to feed now, so the pressure's on.
You know, I
feel like a dad.
I watched some Gundam Wing, and that looks good. Is that from, like, what are those masters? What is that from?
Oh, that's a brand new HD film scan.
Okay, it looks good. That show looks really good, the version of that show. That's on
the thing about Sunrise, they, unlike a few other anime studios, they care a lot about HD transfers. I actually know the studio. They actually send their film archives to Los Angeles for a really, really good film scan. We can do it better here generally than they can in Japan.
Really?
So Cowboy Bebop, that was done with like a brand new film scan here in Los Angeles. And I believe all the Gundam stuff was too. I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure they went with the same house.
I'd believe it. It's that kind of like oh, this is like how HD cell animation, like you want it to look. Like there's Blu-rays of old anime where that's not at all how you want it to look. And then, you know, like those, there was like a release of Mobile Suit Gundam, the first one that was, I think that was actually in the Japanese version of it where it was a little smeary. Like that's kind of what you don't want. But Gundam Wing looks, it looks like Bebop, which is exactly how you want it to look. So yeah, good times.
Yeah, that stuff, there's the place that they use, I'm blanking on the name of it just now, but they actually have light engineers trying to figure out the best way to get the light through the emulsion and into the optical sensor. It's crazy, the level of science that goes into that stuff.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'm excited to actually get around to watching Gundam Wing. Everyone's like, don't review it on the podcast. Like, they don't want that to happen, but... I think it's gonna happen. Like I really want to watch Gundam Wing again. I don't know why. It's been a long time. I'm not sure I ever finished it.
I kind of like it. It's super cheesy in parts.
Well, that's what's. It's fun, right? Like it's really corny
in a fun way. Yeah, it's super fun in how cheesy it is, and also like the characters act exactly as melodramatic and over the top as you'd expect 14-year-olds to.
Right, yeah.
Which is why it connected so hard with 14-year-olds back when it aired.
Yeah,
back in the day.
Totally. That was a big angsty teen thing. It predated, it actually predated emo, like a little bit. Like that was right before emo became a huge thing. And I remember like, you know, angsty Gundam Wing AMVs and stuff like that. Like it was definitely a thing. And the show lends itself to that because like all the characters are like, like they're all like just... horribly depressed and angry all the time and like miserable. It's kind of, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's the cause of emo.
Yeah, right. Gundam Wing is responsible for that entire thing.
Yeah. I will, the opening themes are always just stuck in my head. It's a thing.
Yeah, totally. Well, that one is like super famous.
Mm-hmm.
Super famous.
Super iconic. That's actually, Tumix, I believe that's, the voice actress of Nabiki from Ranma ½.
Really?
Yeah.
These are like old facts you would pass around the anime club. This is what happens when I have you on the show. We talk about like facts from anime club from 1993.
We are ancient.
Yeah.
We are so freaking old. It's not even funny.
Yes, we are. speaking of old, so I watched a film that I know you've seen at least once, Ghost in the Shell, Innocence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When's the last time you saw that?
Maybe about a year.
What'd you think of it upon rewatching? And how long had it been before that? Like in between viewings that time?
It's hard to say because I'm kind of weirdly obsessed with that movie, and not necessarily in a way where I'm actually enjoying watching it.
It's not an enjoyable film.
No, it's one that you just kind of have to sit in the ether and let it wash over you, which is kind of my speed.
Yeah, you like that kind of thing. And it is, like, I'm surprised at how much the CG, like, holds up. Like,
yeah, it's because they intentionally didn't make it look very realistic, I think.
Well, like, and you can tell, it's, like, that's really deliberate. Like, there's a parade shot, like a long, sort of lavish parade shot in the middle of the movie where it's like this Chinese or Lunar New Year parade or whatever. And the only, like, human-esque CG figures are these, like, giant puppet men that are supposed to look like they're moving that way. So, like, it's all very careful. And I was a little stunned at how well that movie holds up aesthetically, like, visually.
But, what version did you watch, language-wise?
I watched the Japanese version. Okay. I flipped over to the dub and didn't notice anything weird about it, but I don't know. I didn't know quite what you were looking for.
I kind of have a thing for the UK dub with the exact same cast.
Yeah, right.
For it's a couple reasons. Different. It's different. The translation is wildly inaccurate, which is why they redubbed it. But some of the casting for the incidental characters, like Haraway, is way better, I think.
Really?
And then when I don't know, I haven't seen the new is it Funimation that brought that out?
Yeah, that's a Funimation release.
I have not seen the new Funimation disc, but Bandai included it on their old Blu-ray. But because they dubbed it for the UK market, it was dubbed at 25 frames a second, so they slowed it down. They had to slow it down, so even though it's the exact same cast, everyone sounds lower.
Right.
But it gets better. They tried to pitch correct it to make it sound better, but they went the wrong direction, and now everyone sounds really low. It sounds so ludicrous. I'm just like, really? Really, guys? Did you not listen to this before you put it on the disc?
That's funny. Man. Yeah, I don't... To my ears, that is not what was happening, but I kind of want to see that. It might make the movie a little more interesting. I don't know, so like, what... Having seen it a lot, I guess, what is your takeaway from that movie? Like, how do you feel about it? Like, not only just as, like, a movie, but, like, as a sequel to Ghost in the Shell.
It's so inaccessible and weird. I don't really think of it. It doesn't occupy the same happy space in my head that the original did, that's for sure.
Right.
I kind of just think of it as another entity, just sort of like a weird meditation on what the ending of Ghost in the Shell meant rather than a direct sequel.
That's a good way to sum it up. Like it kind of weirds me out that, like, I don't know, I have a larger point that I want to make about that movie, but like watching it again, like there were definitely things I appreciated about it a lot more this time. Especially like I thought it was like 2.5 hours long. But it's only 90 minutes. I think
it's really not as long as it feels. It feels
it
really long.
It feels like it's like two and a half hours long or so. And I have to say, the concepts that they're exploring are not that, they're not that complicated. It's just sort of transhumanism 101 and then the same speech that Lex Luthor gives in Batman versus Superman about the tragedy of man not knowing his limitations and being self-aware enough. Like, in other words, having eaten of the fruit in the Garden of Eden and now possessing self-awareness, knows of his own limitations, and this is the tragic thing, right? And, like, that's kind of it. Ghost in the Shell, in a sense, like, buries that under so much pretension, and I hate to use that word, but that's the word pretentious. That is that movie. Like, if you want like a definition of pretension, Ghost in the Shell Innocence. He didn't even want to call it Ghost in the Shell, so it would not be associated with anime or whatever. But it's the cast of Ghost in the Shell, and all it is about is ghosts in shells. So, like, what the fuck? Like, I hate that criticism pretension, because it's just something that people throw at everything they don't like that's, like, even a little bit smart. But this movie is that. Like, it is that. It's a bunch of purposefully obtuse, like, showmanship and, like, confusing stuff on top of fairly simple themes and messages and ruminations on the self. And like, I couldn't help but feel that, like, overwhelmingly, like, Oshii's like a good director, but I feel like this kind of showed him to be like, okay, no, this is actual pretense. This is what pretense is. The dictionary definition of it is, look at how complicated and crazy this is. Oh, hard to understand, but it's really easy to understand. Like, it's not that tough.
I think Oshii can be a good director, but when he gets too far up his own ass, and I think he very clearly did in that movie,
yeah.
he quickly descends into unwatchable territory. And if he happens to be showing enough lyricism, either in the writing or in the cinematography, I still find it watchable.
Yeah.
But it reminded me a lot of his, frankly, miserable live-action movies.
Totally. Like, yeah.
Like, right. Those things are like two garbage.
I've seen Garm Wars. I've seen Garm Wars and, like, one or two of the other ones.
I did not see Garm Wars. I saw a bit of Avalon. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Oh, yeah, Avalon. That's the other one I saw. Everyone's like, you gotta see Avalon. And no, it was awful.
No, it's not terrible. A good movie. But his older movies are way worse. Way worse.
Yeah.
Talking Head, The Red Spectacles, they're practically spectacles. Unwatchable.
That's the one I've seen. It's not watchable.
Yeah. No.
I don't know, man. Like, I admittedly, like, I think I weirdly, now that I like I came to that conclusion about it, like, oh, this is pretense. Like, if I need an example of pretense, I will say Ghost in the Shell Innocence. That doesn't mean it's bad. That doesn't mean that I didn't, like, enjoy it and, like, kind of think, like, this is sort of a weird curiosity, like an oddity. And you sort of wonder how he managed to get away with it, making a movie that, because it was hideously expensive, took forever to make, and was totally obtuse and impenetrable to most people. But it was supposed to be this giant sci-fi spectacle sequel to, like, the most popular, at the time, one of the most popular anime movies ever in the West, Ghost in the Shell. So, like, how did that movie come out? How did that get made? He must have just had total carte blanche.
From what I understand, he had. I mean, yes, and there's really no other way to explain that movie. Traditionally, Japanese producers don't get too deeply involved creatively, for better or worse. In this case, worse.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, you know, my job is to produce. I'll leave the creative heavy lifting to the people that actually went to film school. From what I understand, that happens less these days. But that's just kind of the ethos of how, you know, the Japanese art house cinema scene worked.
Is that considered an art house movie?
For a long time, that's all that Japan had was art house.
Okay.
You know, they would make their little domestic movies, but they wouldn't travel anywhere because they were all, like, they all came from the art world. They weren't really aiming to make populist entertainment.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now they are, and right. Frankly, there's nothing interesting coming out of Japan live action-wise these days.
Well, that's the trend story, right? Like, their film industry is a little not in great shape right now.
Well, that's the thing. Their domestic stuff does well. Just nobody wants it overseas because it's, you know, it's garbage, low-budget Hollywood blockbuster with Japanese people in them.
Oh.
It used to be they would make these really great, interesting art house films. That's all gone.
It just straight up doesn't happen. Yeah, no, like, Japan, like, I feel like I've been reading trend stories about this, about the Japanese film industry and how much it's changed over the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
To more to what you're talking about, but specifically lamenting the death of the Japanese art house movie, like, they just don't really happen anymore.
They don't. What they make now is garbage movie installations, garbage movie iterations of TV dramas.
Right. Yeah.
You get a ridiculous comedy called Sushi Prince. You get Sushi Prince in New York. The theaters.
So it's just multiplex crap. It's just
something
to put on a screen.
Or, you know, the low-budget special effects type stuff. It's kind of the same thing that happened in Korea, just Japan isn't as good at it.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Well, it was an interesting experience watching that movie again, because I don't think I'd seen it since it came out. And obviously, like, the urge to rewatch it had not, like, overtaken me a lot over the years. So,
yeah.
You know, that it showed up in the mail was definitely a factor. But, like, I had that old Oniamis release, that Bandai Visual release. Or, no, that was, I think it was GoFish put that out. It's DreamWorks, right?
It was actually, GoFish did the theatrical and the initial DVD, and then Bandai Entertainment somehow did the Blu-ray. But, right. Like, it was in print for all of, like, 2 months or so.
Yeah. I remember, like, my local FYE had, like, a stack of those, and I felt bad for never picking it up, but now it's available again, so. I don't know, yeah. That's one of those, like, super flawed, weird, like, movies you would only, like, the only person I would ever recommend that movie to is, like, you. Like, guys like you. Guys I know like you. Like, you know, film bros, stuff like that. Like, that's it. That's the only audience for that movie.
It's an interesting exercise. I can't really recommend it to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a while since we've had you on. What anime have you seen recently that you liked? I know you don't have a lot of time to watch, like, new stuff, and your job is
right.
Like, coding, but what have you seen lately?
I mean, I did watch Yuri on Ice.
Right. Like, okay. Else. So what did you think of that?
I really liked it.
What?
Yeah. Everyone really liked it. Shock. It's a good series. The characters are compelling. It did peak way too early, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they might do in the future.
You were probably like me, where once they got to, like, the engagement, there was nowhere left. Like, the show didn't have anywhere to go story-wise, because all of it was this emotional investment in their relationship, and it had already kind of, like, climaxed, basically, and then there's, like, two episodes of... I don't know, what is that supposed to be? Like, suspense or something? Like, it's not...
Well, you know me, I'm a sports anime nerd.
Yeah.
So I was kind of getting into it on that level.
Sure, that's part of it, but the show feels like it runs out of gas a little bit after that.
A little bit. Like the end, the last few episodes definitely drag a little bit.
Yeah.
But that said, the end theme is still on heavy rotation on my iTunes, so,
yeah,
you know.
Me too. Ultimately, I like the ending theme more than the opening theme.
Oh, the opening theme wore on me. The English was too clumsy. Yeah. It just drove me nuts.
Well, I always look for something, like, you and I have to have a similar thing where you're looking for music to work out to. And the opening is not particularly good for it, but the closing is really good for it. Like, it's good for running, like, big time.
It is.
The opening. And that is kind of, that song is great. Like, you can run to it. 100% of the time, that's where my opinion comes from now on all that stuff.
So aside from that, I have actually been going back to the catalog because, you know, my assistant, he's 24, and although he's seen a lot of stuff, he hasn't seen a lot of the, you know, the classics.
Right.
So let's see. We actually started with a very kind of bizarre two things to start with. We started with Angel Cop and Now and Then Here and There.
Yep, that makes sense.
And we switched off between the two. And it's funny because Angel Cop actually holds up better than Now and Then does.
That's not actually that surprising. Now and Then Here and There was kind of like, look at how cruel the world is. Like, that was the whole show. It was just, like, an unblinking portrait of human cruelty, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think that's selling it a bit short, but yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't a whole lot more to it than that as far as it just... I think the main point of it was contrasting modern sensibilities and, you know, of growing up in a peacetime versus someone who would grow up in that environment, and how someone like a kid that grew up in modern Japan would function in a war-torn wasteland. I thought that was interesting. I still do. Yeah. It's still a very good show, and I still recommend it. It's just not as mind-blowing as I remember it being.
I feel like that kind of thing hits you a little harder when you've been exposed to less stuff at this point.
I don't know. I was already a professional by the time I saw that.
Yeah, but it was still like 15 years ago or whatever.
It was. I was young. And also, I think I'm a lot more... I think a lot of the initial shock value was seeing what were clearly children being shot and such and being put in harm's way. And that was, you know, you can't help but feel that on a guttural level.
Sure.
And now I'm way more calloused.
You've also, yeah, okay, well, you've seen the show before. Like, it's not going to be shocking or anything. And I wouldn't chalk it up to, like, and I just don't care if there's violence against children. I don't think you've become desensitized to it.
Right, I mean, of course, but... You got me. Angel Cop, though, is such stupid fun. It's so stupid. It's so fun, and I love it. And I make no apologies. And if you watch it with faithful subtitles, oh my god, it's the most racist, horrifying thing ever.
Yeah, so you should probably, like, warn people, like, Angel Cop is... it's fun to get fucked up and watch Angel Cop. However...
Yeah, it takes a turn.
Something
really
you should know
turn.
About Angel Cop is... it's hideously racist.
Yeah, to be fair, none of the official U.S. releases are... faithful to its racism.
Right.
They always censor either the subtitles or the dub. They always dance around it. But man, it is the... if you watch it with faithful subtitles or understand the Japanese, they're literally using phrases like worldwide Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah.
It is dark, and it's something that, you know, unfortunately someone with a frog avatar would get into today.
Is that getting re-released?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah.
I think last time I heard a couple people were bidding on it, but I think they wanted a lot of money for it for some reason because it did so well before.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, people forget the circumstances under which that was released. It was the first really, truly affordable to teenagers anime VHS release. It came out one episode per tape for $10, and no anime back then was $10.
Right. So that's why it sold pretty well, and yeah.
And, you know, let's face it, a lot of us were edgelords back then.
Right. I feel like at this point, though, like, you want to watch the version, like, that takes that stuff out, because it's still fun to watch without the racism. Like, that's not why it's fun to watch.
No, it's not at all.
That stuff isn't
funny.
That
only comes in the last episode, and you're just like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's not, like, funny or cool anymore.
No.
Like, it's not, yeah. So, like...
that was never in the experience we had back in the day.
No, so, like, yeah, exactly. The version that I saw of that the first time didn't have any of that in it. It was, the version I saw was cut out. So, I eventually saw the super racist version and was like, I'm glad I did not... see this one first, because that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's pretty dark, and it also makes no sense and is completely batshit.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, the blood is funny. The fact that the main enemy looks like Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct is pretty funny. It's super, you know, super nationalistic, and it's a weird show. It's a weird show. Very much a product of its time.
And how did your assistant like it?
He was deeply amused by it. So, let's see. What else did we watch? We watched Toei, which he fell asleep.
Right.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
Not a stunner. Toei's really boring. Like, the only person you can get to appreciate that kind of shit is me, and that's because I'm an aestheticist for that shit, like you are. Like, it's just an aesthetic exercise. You're just sitting there staring at a mood, like an illustration. Like, that's all Toei is.
To be fair, that couch is really comfy.
You're right, your couch is extremely comfortable, but Toei is boring. It's boring.
But we just finished the second episode of Please Save My Earth, and he's pretty riveted. So we were gonna balance that with Hajime no Ippo.
Right.
And we gave up that idea because we have to finish Please Save My Earth.
Cool.
Yeah. So trugging through, and then I've started watching stuff while I work now because I've stopped doing captions, because when you're doing closed captions, you can't listen to another show. You can't have another show on in the background. Right. So Hulu gave me a free account because, you know, I worked with them for that, and I've been watching Golden Girls.
Right. Yeah. My experience with Golden Girls is exclusively as a child, that show being on at my grandparents' house. That
same.
Was the only way
exactly
I ever
exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm actually shocked my grandparents dug it, because it seems really kind of really on point today.
Okay.
I'm actually like, it's still very dated in some respects, and a lot of its humor is just, you know, old people humor.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways it's really funny still. It really holds up, and I really get now the connection that it has with the gay community.
Right.
I never really understood that before, but now I get it. The, you know, building an ad hoc family of your friends when, you know, the world's kind of world you knew is of your loved one has kind of abandoned you, and you're just a bunch of bitter queens.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. I should watch that show. I should watch that show again. Maybe that'll be our next AnCast series discussion. It'll be Golden Girls.
I'd watch that.
Episodes 1 through 26. Get the Funimation DVDs. Man. That's good. I have not really watched too much else. The show that I watch there was a new Scum's Wish out today. I didn't get to that. If you have not seen any of that at all, you might enjoy that a little bit. It's very raw, a lot of raw feelings in that show. It's very adult about sexual relationships, which is something that's kind of uncommon in anime. This week was a recap on Tanya the Evil, so there's nothing new to say there. that show is okay. It's I just want to know where it's going and what it's going to do. But before we like take Twitter questions and stuff, I wanted to get your take on a couple of little industry things.
Sure.
You write Answer Man for the site 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
I do.
And we talked a little bit about this last week about Crunchyroll passing 1 million subscribers. And yeah. I thought you are involved deeply in this business. And I was wondering if you could characterize anime streaming as a business for us, just in your opinion, let's say as a pundit, your opinion of the anime streaming business, like what does it look like out there right now?
I think it looks like Crunchyroll.
That's it. And that's pretty much it. They're the
they've just decimated everybody else. Occasionally one of the mainstream guys gets into it, like Netflix or Amazon, but they're not grabbing everything. Crunchyroll grabs everything, and now that Funimation has effectively been vanquished as an enemy, it's just they get everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, so what do you make of like Amazon's anime strike? Like, how do you feel about that? What does that tell you?
My gut reaction is that they don't really know what they're doing. They don't really seem to know what's popular very well and don't really have a good lay of the anime landscape. Like I half expect to go to that site and I see and see like badly crudely drawn anime figurines that were obviously done by Americans.
It's not that bad.
I'm exaggerating slightly, but I'm having a hard time taking it seriously because they have so much money. That's the issue. They have so much money. They can throw it at anything. The license fees they're paying are insane, just as a matter of course. They're not even trying to negotiate them down. They're just like literally just offering them. But I'm I don't really... I'm not sure that anyone is actually using Amazon Prime for video. I mean, sure, a few people are here and there, but I don't... They don't break out the numbers separately from what people that use Amazon Prime for just the free shipping.
Yeah, I've noticed that. They say, like, Amazon Prime has however many, 78 million, something like that, users.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of that.
The video audience, which it is obviously
definitely...
not. Yeah, that is obviously not the video audience. I mean, I just, like... I don't know. I kind of agree with you. Like, it didn't seem like a serious... It's just like, well, there's money to be made here, so let's step into this space.
Right. And, you know, in their interview with you, they're like, well, anime seemed like an underserved market. It's like, did you Google anime streaming?
Yeah.
Literally every show is being streamed. There is almost nothing going unsold. No rational person who had taken a real hard look at the anime streaming market could possibly say that. That's insane.
Yeah. To suggest that anime fans are an underserved market is, well,
stupid.
That's just not true. It's not true. Yeah. And to say that is demonstrably untrue, and your entire audience knows that it's demonstrably untrue. And I don't want to sit here and, like, bag on him. I was just curious, like, what your opinion of that whole thing was, and, like, if that represented an actual... serious competitor in the marketplace? Do you think they'll get bored and wander out of it again? Do you think they'll double down? Like, what do you think's gonna maybe happen? Like, I don't have any problem with Amazon stepping into the business and saying, hey, we want to do this too. That's fine. I'm just curious where it's gonna go.
Well, I like most anime fans, am very leery of any large entertainment company getting into anime because they never pay enough attention. They always come into it with this, hey, we are so-and-so. We know what we're doing. We're bigger than Jesus. And they inevitably fuck it up. They just do. That's how it's always happened. From Warner Brothers to Anchor Bay.
Right.
So, if they can do it right, fine. More power to them. I have no problem with that. And, it's, you know, I have a Amazon Prime subscription and probably won't watch any of their shows anyway. Because I don't watch anything simulcast because I don't have time. But... My trust that they will do it perfectly and listen to the fans is fairly low.
It's the last part that I think kind of, because if I understand anything about the anime business, is that it is A, not very big, and B, like, really is directly communicative with its fans and relies on that fan feedback to be told, like, what to do and, like, what the audience actually wants. Like, that feels like it's an even more direct relationship between industry and fan than, like, a lot of other industries, right? Like, anime companies listen. They listen because they have to. Because
they're usually fans themselves, and that means a lot to anime nerds.
Yeah, and that like, means a lot. And it drives the business, frankly. Like, Crunchyroll relies on that, too. That's how they became number one. So, like...
Crunchyroll relies on that there's a sense of camaraderie with fans that, you know, let's face it, it's contentious sometimes, but for the most part, Funimation, Sentai, Crunchyroll, they're all right in there with the fans. They're all communicating directly with the fans. Every convention, there are people out talking directly with them, taking their temperatures on what they like, what they don't like. They're doing, and, you know, Viz does the same thing. They're always, like, out on the floor doing research, asking the fans directly what they want. I can't think of any other business in the entertainment industry that does that. Anything close to that.
Yeah. Like, other industries will claim to be fan-driven, but they're not. Not in any material way, not in any meaningful way. And anime definitely is. So, like, that's my big criticism of Amazon, the anime strike, is that... That's the part of the business that they seem to think, like, well, we can ignore this part. And I'm telling, like, no, you can't. Like, not really. No, you can't. Not in this business. It's not particularly smart, I don't think.
Yeah.
You can't get serious about it and ignore that part. Or just give it, like, the same lip service that every company trying to get money from nerds gives, you know, which is, we really appreciate the passionate fan base, you know, that kind of thing. But I was curious to get your take on it, and it sounds like... you and I are pretty much on the same page on that.
Right. Yeah. Let's see, who else is in the space? Netflix seems to be more interested in co-creating their own shows at this point.
Right.
You know, they might pick up a show here and there, but I don't see them becoming a major player.
Well, that's a studio at this point, right? Like,
exactly. They're interested in, like, driving the content and acting like a traditional American TV network. They're not interested in basically taking whatever Japan gives us, which is how anime works.
Yep.
I don't really see that being much of a thing. Hulu's kind of a wild card.
Right.
And, you know, I literally just visited their office last week, so I'm a little... my judgment might be a little skewed on this, but they are actually fans there. Like the people that are in charge of anime, when I went to visit them and I, you know, shook everyone's hands like, hey, I'm Justin. I do such and such. And I also write Answer Man on Anime News Network. And they're like, oh no, we know who you are. We read ANN every day. And I'm like, wait, what? And, you know, not to toot our own horn, but if you're reading ANN every day, you're probably an anime nerd.
Yeah, actually, based on our demographics, you're almost certainly an anime nerd.
If you're going through the news feed and the sidebar and everything, well, over 70% of it makes any sense to you, you probably live and breathe this stuff.
Yeah, I would say 50%.
Yeah. We'll
drop that number.
So if you're reading it every day and it's not just going in one ear and out the other, then that says a lot.
Yeah.
So Hulu hasn't made any major moves to simulcast anything on their own yet. They've been working with Funimation and a couple other things. And I think probably now with that Crunchyroll partnership, that ship might have sailed. But, you know, the stuff that they got from, you know, the Gundam stuff, that was all direct from Sunrise.
Hmm.
So, that whole company is in the middle of reinventing themselves. There's a lot of weird, you know, new construction going on behind the scenes. They're launching that new, kind of replacement cable TV service. And so I'm not sure what direction they're going to go. I'm curious though, because I think if anyone could surprise us, it's Hulu.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch. I use that service a lot now because there's no ads anymore. I wouldn't. Yeah, like that. That would be fine with me. I have to admit, like, I don't see anime getting any bigger than it currently is in terms of production. So, like, this is the size of the business, unless, like, there's one huge success that breaks out and suddenly everything gets popped, like another thing where all tides are lifted by the same boat, or all boats are lifted by the same tide or whatever. But it seems like this is pretty much the size of the business. Like, how would we get to a point where there's more than like 45 shows a season, right? Like,
well, yeah, I think we've definitely reached peak anime and probably did a few seasons ago.
Right. That's what it feels like.
In terms of viewership, I think there's still a lot of potential left.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying, I'm just saying like the way to, but you would need like something major, like a major event. Something big would have to happen in order to expand that audience even further.
yes. Or
you just keep it up.
I mean, Crunchyroll hitting a million viewers, that didn't happen because of one or two giant paid subscribers, I should say. It didn't happen because of one or two giant hits. That happened because of the slow drip of content that slowly sucked people into the vortex.
Sure, but the difference between something like Crunchyroll, which is a million subscribers, and like Hulu, which is significantly more than that, is 12 million, yeah.
Yeah, in the U.S. only.
Right, that's just in the U.S. So,
yeah.
I'm just saying, like...
Yeah,
I feel the corporate expectations around anime sometimes are a little out of whack with the reality of the size of the audience is all I'm saying. Like, Crunchyroll's been around for a decade, and they got a million people.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And we need the Hulus and the Netflixes to expose people to anime because few people are just stumbling on anime for the first time by going to Crunchyroll.
True.
That's just not a thing that happens. So, you know, things, fandom spreads organically, i.e. through friends and through, you know, stumbling on things online. But you have to be able to make it more visible to the mainstream somehow. And I'm that's Crunchyroll's next big challenge,
yeah,
is getting some sort of penetration to people that are not already fans.
Yeah. That's a good point. I agree with that. It's a good rundown. Okay. Why don't we go ahead and take some Twitter questions?
Cool.
I feel like this is going to be an interesting year for anime, but not like... The future of the business looks fine to me.
Yeah. I don't see any real weirdness on the horizon, but I also don't... I also don't know where the growth is going to come from.
Right. Well, we got a huge season coming, so we'll see what happens. Spring is gigantic.
Right. But there are mostly sequels, though, right?
Yeah, but it is literally, like, every major currently running anime property at once in the spring. It is like, half a dozen giant shows, including Attack on Titan and My Hero Academia, all at once. It's a big season. That's, like, everything you can count on to make money is this spring.
Is My Hero Academia actually big? I thought it was just kind of,
No, it did really well.
Really?
It's not, like, okay. Huge, but, I mean, it's not, like... Like, I guess it's, like, a couple steps below One Punch Man. Like, it's not like One Punch Man, but it's up there, you know? It's not giant or anything. Mm. Okay. Twitter questions from Weepy Sweet Money. He wants to know, welcome back, Justin. My question is, do you guys think your name could have a good run in the United States like Spirited Away did? Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, it's a good film.
Hell and back.
I'm still shocked at how well received that's been by critics, because it is so stereotypically anime.
Maybe I watch too much anime, but like the anime, I need to stop hitting my lap here. Sorry about that. There was somebody complaining about that last week. Stop hitting your lap. Sorry about that. The anime, like, aspects of your name are like, it has a weird anime, like an anime TV opening. And the characters look like anime, but it's not like written like standard anime. It doesn't play out like standard anime, I don't think.
Oh, sure. The whole first half sure does, with the wild takes and the sweat beads and the internal monologues and the hanging out on the school roof and jokes about name order and things like that.
I don't think that stuff is inherently inaccessible. Like, it doesn't seem like it's automatically, like, a detriment to the quality of the film. Or, like, oh, critics won't like this because they hang out on the roof and they make jokes about name order. Like, it's a Japanese movie, you know? Like, yeah, that stuff is anime, but, like, I guess I wouldn't expect critics to just dismiss it because it has tropes in it.
I'm expecting critics to dismiss anime because of its unique tropes.
But they don't watch anime. They would reject it just on, because the poster looks like a certain thing. Like, if the poster looked like Yu-Gi-Oh, they'd reject it.
Maybe that's what I was expecting, because it looks closer to Yu-Gi-Oh than it does Brave of the Fireflies.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not like a super anime movie. Like, it is, but I don't know, like... That didn't really seem like, while I was sitting there watching it, I didn't think like, oh man, critics aren't going to like this because it's got so much anime shit in it. Like, I was like, oh no, this is so well written. It's like so well written and like so relatable, and these characters are so good. Like, even if they did have like niggling problems with like the side, you know, oh, it kind of, it's like anime. Like, it just didn't seem like that would really stop the movie from being received really well. Like, that's how good the script is. That's how well paced and well done that movie is.
It's such a good movie, and I can't wait to see it again in English.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing the dub.
Yeah.
Okay. Penguin Truth wants to know what we think of the standalone complex Blu-ray. So I haven't seen this. I haven't seen them myself yet.
Neither have I, but from what I'm hearing, they're kind of disasters.
Yeah, so there's like macro blocking or something, right? Is that...
No. The video quality, from what I've heard, looks fine.
Okay. What's wrong with it then?
First of all, it's closed captions in all caps instead of subtitles.
They keep doing this, right? So this is their fault. The theatrical Ghost in the Shell, that was them too, right?
Yep.
Those were their subtitles. That wasn't Funimation. Which is fucked up, because Funimation totally took the blame for that, but it wasn't them.
So that was part one, and part two is apparently in the first episode, the dub cuts to the Japanese for a couple seconds.
Nice. What?
Yeah. And now it looks like the people that complain to them on Twitter are just being blocked.
Yeah, I saw that. They're just not ready to sell.
Yeah, they're not ready for anime fans. They're just not. They're not used to that.
And it's weird because you immediately see, like, well, they're not used to dealing with customers who, like, really care about the product. So they immediately...
Well, have you seen what they normally release?
Well, yeah, but... Yeah, right. But they immediately take all that feedback as, like, personal attacks and, like, oh, these people are just... They're just being unreasonable. But it's like, no, dude, this is how anime fans are. Like, you needed to give a shit about that product, putting it out, because, like, they care and they will tell you. Like, they absolutely will tell you whether or not, you know.
You know, honestly, if it were me, I'm not a standalone complex fan. Those discs sat in my collection for a decade, and I don't think I got through one of them.
That show puts me to sleep.
It's not my favorite. But if I did really care about the show and I bought those discs and that's what I got... I would return them as defective.
Right. Well, that's what people, I guess, should do if they're not getting any kind of...
Hey, would you rather have something with no usable subtitles and audio problems on the dub, or something in standard definition? Those SD discs are way out there, and they're still super cheap because they made way too many of them.
Yeah, I got a set of those. If you want Standalone Complex on DVD, it is plentiful. Plentiful.
And it's an upscale anyway, isn't it?
It's a DigiPaint show, so yeah, I assume. Okay, Xavier Santana wants to know if Funimation is really making enough money off its subscription service that I can afford to dub Handshakers. I mean...
I did watch episode one because everyone was talking about how janky the animation was, and they were right.
They were not joking. Jacob was watching it on the couch the other day and with the most recent episode, and somehow it's worse now than it was in the first set. Like, something hideously embarrassing and horrible happens, like, every couple of minutes. The animation on that show is such a wreck. Like, I can't get over it.
Well, I mean, episode one is the one that they have all the time in the world to make. If it looked like that in episode one, I mean, it is downhill from there.
Yeah. Well, no, episode one was like the tour de force. They were showing you everything they had in the chamber, and, you know, later on, resources aren't quite there, so it gets a little worse. Somehow, it gets worse. Cyber Mormon wants to know, for Zach, will the new cosplay melee show on Sci-Fi fill the heroes of cosplay shaped hole in your heart? I don't know. Probably not. Heroes of Cosplay was kind of a product of early nerd culture. That was like 4 years ago at this point. 3-4 years ago. And it was before total saturation. So it was produced a little differently, and like it was a little more like intending to reach a mainstream audience. But now I feel like they're not going to bother trying to reach a mainstream audience anymore. I don't know. I'm curious to see what that show is like, but I don't think I'm going to be super hard on it.
How will a cosplay show work in the era of Funko Pops?
Yeah, right. In the era when, like it's just mainstream culture now, there's nothing, like, super nerdy or geeky. It's like, well, this guy has a Stormtrooper who cares? You see that walking down the street now. Let's see here. Did you ever watch March Comes In Like a Lion?
No.
It had a pretty okay portrayal of depression, but that was pretty much it.
Huh. Well, lots of anime does.
That's true. The same person wants to know our opinions on The Sopranos and Six Feet Under. Old HBO. I keep meaning to rewatch The Sopranos.
Sopranos is really, really good. It holds up pretty well, but I didn't want to rewatch it for the longest time because so much of that show is what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So if you have any memory at all of what happened, it's not entertaining. Yeah, 6 Feet Under never grabbed me. I always thought it was way overwritten.
Yeah, I never got it.
Yeah.
Let's see here. to Justin, why do you think the manga Reborn has not had more success? Legalized scanlations are a potential game changer?
No, they're not. Shut up.
Legalized simulations? I haven't heard anything about that. That doesn't sound like a thing.
No, it's not a thing, and they're probably just advocating for it because that's their thing, but okay. It's not a thing. Stop it.
Anyway.
I don't know. It seems to have a lot of the Shonen Jump formula, but I don't know. I think it might be a little too esoteric. So some things like that just never catch on. I don't know why.
You know, with something like that, it's either going to catch on organically or not at all. Like, yeah, I don't think you can force...
Naruto was already huge by the time Viz ever got their mitts on it.
Yeah, kind of. Okay. R. Phillips wants to know, with the release of the Pat Labor reboot short at the Japan Animator Expo looking like more of a gauge of interest for a new series, could it still work now? Would it need to be reimagined to appeal to a modern-day fan's tastes? Pat Labor?
Pat Labor was always kind of a... how do I put this? It was always kind of Mecha Seinfeld.
Yeah.
It was always, you know, occasionally there was some big adventure, but mostly it was a show about nothing.
Yeah.
And those are always very specific enough their time. It's hard to imagine a team of people being trapped out on, you know, on reclaimed land that isn't all that inhabited and being completely cut off from the outside world because internet and cell phones. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of how Pat Labor worked. I didn't see the live-action TV show because it looked terrible. And I haven't seen that Animator Expo short yet. I tried to watch it the other day, and the site wasn't working for me. I don't know. Pat Labor never really caught on in the U.S. anyway, so...
Nope. No, I mean, like, if you want to make Pat Labor again, I guess that's fine, but you make it for 35-year-olds... 35-year-old Japanese guys, that's who you make that for, right?
Yeah, I mean, the existential ennui of 2017 is way different from the existential ennui of 1990.
Well, I just, like, I don't think you're going to get new anime fans into, like, mild-mannered, sitcom-y type of giant robot sort of premise. Like, you could either modernize it, which I don't think the premise is unique enough anymore, really, like, to really... Yeah, I just like I feel like if you reboot that, you make it for its original audience anyway. Like you sell it to those guys, and
well, also that show was extremely character driven.
Yeah,
it was all about its characters, and it leaned heavily on its character writing. That's hard to recapture. I don't know how they would do that without the original writers, and I have a feeling Michiko Yokote, which was a big part of that show, probably wouldn't. Want to revisit that. Mamoru Oshii probably wouldn't either.
Right.
Not in any major way, anyway. He might, like, let them give him executive producer credit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, so before we take questions from the chat, we did get a bunch of Twitter questions about the Oscars. What of those films have you seen?
I saw La La Land, which I loved way more than you did,
mm-hmm.
but I also don't think anyone who hasn't lived in LA / showbiz and had a bunch of showbiz friends would connect with as much as the Academy will.
Yeah. Right.
And also maybe secretly harbors fantasies about life turning into... musical?
Sure. Yeah, everyone has numbers. I mean, I have those. I liked La La Land. It was all right.
Okay.
It wasn't best fucking picture. It was all right.
I don't know. I just really appreciated it on a very simple level. Also, I'm a big Damien Chazelle fanboy.
Really?
Yeah, I loved Whiplash.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah, Whiplash was a good movie, but I don't know. You know, the only thing is, like, if La La Land had just come out and just been a movie, I saw it, like, I feel like 2 days before it was announced, this is the inevitable winner of Best Picture.
Right.
And when I walked out of the theater, I was like, that was good. I enjoyed it. And then 2 days later, this is going to win Best Picture. And I was like, why? It immediately makes you reevaluate. You, like, you can't help but go back and be like, yeah, but... Best Picture? Like
because it gets the geriatric actors that comprise the Academy right in the gut.
Yeah, I know. No, I understand that. I understand.
Oh, the cynical reason. Yeah, you get that.
I understand, like, it's a movie for actors, and that actor... This is why the artist won Best Picture. It's not because the artist is, like, the best movie that came out. It's because it really appealed to blue-haired actors, and, like, that's who picks the Academy Awards. It's old, old actors. That's pretty much it.
Moonlight is a way better movie.
It is. Significantly better. I would say...
And...
actually the best movie of the year, like, and if you watch them both, that is obvious. I feel like that's super obvious.
I think so. I actually don't think I've seen any of the other big contenders. I don't know, this year I didn't care. I just didn't. Most of them just seemed so Oscar baity and just, you know, oh, that's another biopic, that's another one of those.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat brings up, remember Argo won Best Picture?
Why are we even still paying attention to this? It's such...
Argo.
Bullshit. Argo. It's entertaining. It's okay. It's a fine movie. It's...
Best Picture of the year. Got a question from the chat. Wants to know, Justin, what's your favorite buried garbage anime?
I'll probably Angel Cop, but... in terms of just
cop,
like using...
That's fine if that's your answer. Right off the top of your
head.
I think that's
my answer. I think that's my answer. I was just trying to think back what I wrote about in Buried Garbage. And yeah, that there were so few of them that were genuinely fun to watch that, yeah, I think that was it.
What was that one that... Mike, it was like Twinkle Star. What was that called? That OVA with the trucks?
Oh my god, Harbor Light Story from Fancy Lala.
Harbor Light Story from Fancy... Watch that shit. That's good shit.
Yeah, that's... Smoke a little something before you do.
Yes, absolutely. Do that beforehand, but yeah. Let's see here. Land of Excusion wants to know, did you work on Discotech's Eat Man releases? How happy are you that they were given a second chance?
I did do the compression for those DVDs. I didn't author them. I am ecstatic. That was on my all-time, God, I wish this would come out wish list. And I grabbed those immediately when they came out, and I'm happy to have them in my collection.
I haven't seen Eat Man since perhaps 1998.
I don't think you'll enjoy it.
No? Okay.
I just don't. It doesn't seem like your show, because it's... The only way to... They're so cheaply made, and they're so draggy, that the only way you'll enjoy them is in the float in the ether level, which is something that I'm clearly more a fan of.
I mean, I like that stuff, too.
Okay. Well, give it a shot. You can borrow my discs.
Yeah, all right, maybe. I've been curious about it for a long time. I've only seen that one episode. Let's see. Stern, if you can, asks, do either of you still own any VHS tapes? I know you do.
No, actually.
You don't? Really? You got rid of them all?
Wait, I do get rid of them as soon as I can upgrade them to a better format, and I think the only thing I have left is the VHS subtitled Pioneer release of Dog of Flanders movie.
Okay.
Which I never got around to transcribing the subtitles and retiming them to the Japanese import DVD that I own.
Sounds like a Justin thing.
It's a Justin thing, because it's children suffering.
Your friend and mine, Brady Hardall, wants to know, why isn't Tsuchi Pie your favorite buried garbage?
Get to work, Brady.
Okay. Andrew McGee wants to know, do you ever get to work on the theatrical releases of anime that have been popular recently?
Theatrical releases?
Yeah, you have occasionally worked on theatrical.
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't done a theatrical release in a long time. And honestly, I've kind of gotten out of that business. There's so many things that can go wrong outside of your control. Did I ever share the story of, I won't name the show, but it was a really, really high-profile anime release that I did all the DCP duplication for and had to FedEx them right to theaters, and somehow FedEx erased all the hard drives?
Wow. Yeah, right. No, I remember you told me about this, but...
Yeah. And that was a panicked trip to Costco to clean them out of portable hard drives, because you're supposed to use these, like, massive, you know, rack mount enclosure hard drives for those. I'm just like, no, USB 3, just... And That was a sleepless night.
It sounds like it.
That was not a fun night. I did not enjoy that.
Do we have any other questions from the chat? Stacey Pro wants to know if you have any new projects that you can talk about. Anything like super recent? Like what's on the shelf right now that I could go buy?
Well, let's see. Ray Earth finally came out. I feel like I finished that disc about a year ago, and that one almost killed me. But it looks really, really good. I'm really proud of that one. Brady actually did an amazing job pulling together all the extras and such. Disco Tech also just announced a street date for Freedom.
The Cup Bill NBA.
Yeah. It's still a good show. The animation is a little dated, but it's still a good show. That's 7 episodes. We finally crammed all 7 episodes on one disc rather than like 4 different releases. And that's all coming out on in a combo set. I finished My Youth in Arcadia, which I'm really excited about. So yeah, there's a bunch of good stuff coming out, and a lot of good stuff coming from Anime Limited. If you're listening from the UK,
cool. Andy Pfeiffer wants to know if we have thoughts on the release of Big O. I was there at Otakon. The last Otakon I went to was when they announced they had Big O. That was like 2013. Or something like that.
I didn't happen to see it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy it's coming out. I'm not a fan of that show, but I'm happy for the fans that are.
I want to see it again. I haven't seen it since it aired, and I'm curious to see it again. People lost their shit over that show. They loved it.
They did.
Yeah. People fucking love the Big O. It is a thing. There is nostalgia for it, for sure. Let's see. Somebody says, thank you for recommending Millennium Actress on a previous show. He said he loved it so much he bought an animation cell from the film. Wow.
Well, I'm jealous. I want one.
Where'd you find that?
Yeah, I have a couple cells behind me here. I have Kite, Robot Carnival, and Genocyber.
Oh, yeah. Hey, me too. I've got, Goof Troop and He-Man up there. Yeah. See, we both have animation art on our walls.
Right.
Art.
I also have a Don Hertzfeldt doodle from his little Kickstarter thing.
Yeah. let's see here. Someone asks a question. Do you enjoy sushi, Justin?
Sexually.
Yeah. Hey, okay, not literally.
Okay, yeah, not literally, but I am that guy at the conveyor belt sushi place with, like, plates stacked to the ceiling. I will eat myself sick on sushi and have no regrets.
I've been there for several of those occasions, and it is a sight. It's something to see. That is a huge stack of plates. It represents like 40 pieces of sushi.
40? I was slacking that day.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, to be fair, I am in my late 30s now. I can't eat what I used to eat, but, you know, the days of 4 pounds, 3 ounces of sushi in one sitting are behind me, and yes, I did do that once.
Yeah, 4 pounds, 3 ounces of sushi?
I trained for that one. And it hurt me, and I regret nothing.
See, you eat that much sushi, I will eat that much churro-flavored popcorn. That's the problem. Like, I will eat that much Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's a problem with me.
By the way, next time you're in my neighborhood, I got to take you to that ice cream place. They do Cinnamon Toast Crunch flavored ice cream.
Yo, like, there's a place near me that does that, and they're tired of seeing me, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Once, like, so churro flavor is just Cinnamon Toast Crunch? Like, that's it. And so now they put that in everything, and that's, like, one of, like, that has, like, a real, I feel like if it's a dessert-based thing, that has, like, a really high chance of being super good. Like, super tasty. If something is, like, churro flavor or Cinnamon Toast Crunch infused, that's going to be good shit. I feel like
cinnamon and sugar is just the best combination.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I mean, I guess it's, you know, but now you're seeing it in everything. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I love that shit. I have more of an appreciation for food now. I allow myself to enjoy it more. Like, I couldn't before. I had too much of a complex about it. But now I feel like I can enjoy food. It's great.
Yeah, don't go this far down the path. You know, no. You stay back there.
Well, I have you as like this giant warning flag. Like, don't go this far, though. Don't go this far. I can just see like, oh well, I just won't be like Justin, and everything will be okay.
Every workout is with tears in my eyes.
Yeah, right. See, I still go, and I'm like, oh, today's a good day. That's all right.
just cross the finish line of the CrossFit workout, just like crying, sobbing the word redemption over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. Okay, I think that actually just about wraps this up. Hey, man, I miss having you on. We should have you on more often.
I've actually really missed this. This was so much fun.
Yeah. Well, we'll have you on more often over the year. And yeah, don't be a stranger. Don't be a stranger.
I'll be on whenever you ask me.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the chat, for coming by. Yeah, take it easy. We'll see you all next week for sure. Hey, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week. We'll